Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Hello and welcome back to this bonus series of the Sunday Podcast.
Yep, it's the big one. The Olympics is here.
I'm Ollie Lum.
I'm Matt Seddon.
And over the next 10 days, we're going to be bringing you daily content on Twitter, Instagram and here on the pod.
We're covering all the distance events from 800 metres right up to the marathon.
It's going to be a good one.
Enjoy.
Right, guys, day nine's done. We're pretty much finished. We've just got one more of these tomorrow for you guys and joined by another special guest. We got episode three. Is that right, Jen?
It is.
Episode three guest, Jenny Nesbitt. One of our favourite guests on the pod. She's told me to say that, so we'll get it out of the way.
How are you, Jen, first of all? Said that.
You've been batting on to me all week about that.
Right, you two, let's just get down to business, mate. Because it was incredible. I mean, oh my God, I'm still in shock. I said to Lumsky, what's the time? Like 5 o'clock? I wanted to record this at like 2 o'clock whenever the races were done. But Jenny was moving house, so she's kindly come on now for us. Initial thoughts, Jen? Favorite race today?
Favorite race today has got to be the men's 1500. I thought it was so good. I kind of have always had a little bit of a crush on Jakob. So for him to get the win, like that's just, you know, brilliant. And yeah, for Josh to come third, I honestly thought he was going to get second like at one point.
Yeah.
Like he just needs to throw himself a little bit harder over the line, I think he would have done, but oh my God, it was so good.
I totally agree, and I think, yeah, there's a lot of girls out there with a crush on Jakob. But mate, Lumsky, did you see the race going that way? Because I everyone obviously knew it was going to go quick, but I didn't think Jakob would be the one to take it through that first 400. Like he must have obviously had a real inner confidence in himself. His pace judgment is phenomenal. You know, he just went 56, and in the reins were over the Chariot, man. Chariot overtook on that second lap and then put in like a 55, and they were 151 through 800.
Yeah, I think I actually said to sat there watching it with Matty Eds earlier, I said it's going to be 56 first lap. So I called that, but yeah, like you, I think I thought Chariot was going to take it through that. But I think for Jakob, like we spoke yesterday, just about how much of a rhythm runner he is. And I think he just recognized that if no one's going to take that first bit, he'll just make sure it's quick from the off. And I think he probably presumed that someone else would come past him at some point, whether that be McSwain or Chariot.
Yeah, man. Oh, yeah. And it, I think, what do you think happened to Whiteman today, Jen?
I think he ran a really great semi-final, and he may have just run a little bit too hard, I think, and just didn't have the legs to recover today. That's kind of what I feel may have happened.
Yeah, it's tricky because I think there was like, I'm not sure if the semi had too much of it. I think Whiteman was really trying to get on it. You saw, was it with about 600 to go? It was like almost three of them had broken away. It was Chariot, Jakob, McSwain. Whiteman just let a gap open it, just at, like he'd gone a little bit too hard on maybe that sort of third lap.
I think for me, Whiteman almost tried to cover all the moves too well.
Yeah, that's
and
what
too quickly. And it was just a little burst of acceleration to cover every move rather than having a smooth ride around. Because you take this out of context and you look at the results list, you think, right, to finish high up on that, like, take this out of the context of the Olympics. You say that's the Monaco results. You think to run well on that, you have a smooth ride on the curb and you just sit in and relax. And that's not what the people lower down the field were doing.
Mm. Yeah, I'd probably agree with that, man. He did look a little bit, you know, he was reacting to almost everything in that final, and doing it at that pace, you know, 151 for 800, it's just, it's going to cost you. But yeah, I mean, Josh Kerr was sublime for me. He was obviously confident going in 3:29.05. He ran, you know, 400th of a second behind Chariot. These guys are the best in the world. They're probably, you know, one of the best of our generation.
Interesting though, because Josh, like he said, his like first heat wasn't great, and he had to like really check in with himself and kind of, you know, make changes to have a great run today. And I think that kind of just goes to show that you can't predict final off how people have been running in the rounds as well. Like,
let's talk about that a little bit, because for me, I think Josh Kerr was smart in the fact that he obviously did. I don't think many people overraced coming into this Olympics, to be fair, because obviously the circumstances, COVID, all that. But, you know, he looked like he used each round to put in, like, I remember Christina Hurwicz doing the same in the 400 meters. You know, she got better each round. It looked like Kerr had planned to do exactly the same. You know, he must have run 3:36, 3:32, and then 3:29.
Yeah. He's like worked his way into it. And I think, especially with like all the travel, the weather and everything, that's probably a really smart way to kind of go get about like a champs. Especially if you've got three races in like a period of 5 days or whatever it was.
I think that's it. Like you say, like the travel there. And I think anyone who's been on holiday to somewhere that's a different time zone will know that you start feeling better the longer you're there. And that's just basic kind of humans, like in general, not just in athletics. So actually going there and making sure you're kind of chilled throughout the rounds and actually getting the best out of yourself, what is it, maybe 7, 8, 9 days into your stay, rather than just hitting it on the first and making sure you're ready for that. But I think it does take some confidence though, because he could have been really, he got a little bit lucky to get through that first heat, let's put it that way. He was the only fastest loser from his heat originally. And then let's look at it that way. Like, imagine the qualification had been slightly different, and he wouldn't have even been in the race because he didn't get the auto cue in the first round. It's crazy, crazy margins at that level.
Yeah, you can always look back at that. But I think he was always going to get through that first round. But I think, like, it was weird to see him not look, you know, as strong and as good as he has done, like, you know, through the past couple of seasons. And he just, from there though, you know, I think it's almost a good thing. I don't think he would have finished as high in the final had he have been comfortable in the heats, because I think he was really aware, and, you know, you almost take a step back and you think, God, I need to, it just gives you that little bit of kick up the arse, if that makes sense.
Definitely. Cause he said in his interview afterwards that he was confident and he needed to be, and sometimes it comes across as cocky, but I think when you kind of have that kind of, oh gosh, I've only just made it through, you can be as confident as you want, but there's still an element of, I need to up my game here.
Yeah. But there's something I want to talk about with you guys. And it's, I mean, Lum, you know, I've always been the belief of, like, you know, to be world-class or something, you got to do the 10,000 hours. I'm that makeup. And I think as well, when I look at Jakob and I look at Chariot and I look at Kerr was on the all-time list as an under-13 boy. We know how good Jakob was when he was young. And we obviously, Chariot's Kenyan. He's been running since he was probably born as well. You know what I mean? It would be fair to say. And, you know, I think a lot of this, like, modern day in this Western culture is, like, you have to, you know, do loads of different sports and you can't specialize before you're 18 or 16, whatever they say. And I think that is true. You will get to a good level if you don't specialize. But when you really look at the best of the best, dude, they've specialized for years. You know what I mean? And they have done nothing but their craft for many years. And I think, you know, that for me, that shows, like, you'll get to a good level if you don't specialize. But these boys have specialized, and that effectively, that's who you're up against at the end of the day.
And they've also specialized in, like, racing as well.
Yep.
If they've started racing from the age of 13, 14, like, imagine how many, like, in the UK, like, English schools, or in America, NCAAs, like, they've learned how to race. When I think everyone in that field today probably could have won it, but it's the one who can race the smartest. And I think you learn that, don't you, from doing those sorts of races.
Yeah. And I just think like distance running and especially sort of 1500 meters up, you know, it's just a lot of factors which makes a good runner. So when you specialize, it helps, you know, as I would argue that some of the sprints, I would argue, like, you know, 100 meter sprinting is mostly talent, raw talent for me. You know what I mean? And genetic makeup. Would you agree, Lon?
I think there are a lot more elements in the sprints that you kind of forget about. But I think there is a sense that you need to build like your aerobic system over a sustained period of time. And I think that's why we're seeing so many younger athletes perform so well on the world stage. And it's not because, not taking anything away from the fact that their age is still impressive. They're doing it at those ages. But when you probably look at the guys and girls who are doing it at a young age, it's because they have, like you say, specialized from a lot younger and been doing really kind of, maybe not specific training, but they've been doing really relevant training for a long period of time already in their like short athletic careers. Like you look at Jakob, like I think Gertz came out already and say that he's got no more talent than Philip or Henrik.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just because they got it right with Jakob. Like Henrik, they got it pretty well. I mean, the guy's a European champ. Serious times over 1500. Philip the same, like maybe a little bit better, but he struggled with injuries and things. And then Jakob comes along and he's a machine. It's crazy to think, but obviously he's been training at what is essentially an elite level, I think, since about 12 years old.
Exactly. And I think for me, that's probably the only downfall of specializing when you're young is the mental aspect. You know, it causes a lot of mental strain on young athletes. And as a result, you know, we're fearful of dropout and stuff like that, rightly so. And I think that's probably the only negative of specializing when you're young. But other than that, you know, it's clear to see. And I've always thought, you know, why do the Ethiopians and the Kenyans reign supreme, you know, in the 5 and the 10? Yes, they live at altitude, you know what I mean? They have a good diet, but it's more of a fact that these guys have probably been running at the highest level for 10 years minimum, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think if anyone is interested in people like Jakob, like make sure you go and watch the Ingebrigtsen's documentary and stuff. If you haven't seen it, don't actually know what it's called. I think it's Inside or Team Ingebrigtsen, I think it's called. I think they do with English subs on YouTube for a couple of the seasons, but so interesting just to see. And I think you see it with their younger sister as well, because I think in one of the seasons she's about to turn 12 or 13. She's got to make a decision and tell her dad, yes, yeah, I want to be an athlete, or no, I don't, because he says he doesn't mind which. But if she decides by 12, she's then a pro athlete essentially, and she's got to do all the training that her older brothers do.
Well, mate, I mean, on that as well, I remember watching the early Ingebrigtsens, like from like 2014 or whatever, and Jakob was like probably like 14, and the dad would almost be using reverse psychology on him. He'd be like, nah, Jakob, you're not good enough. You haven't got the mental ability. And he would honestly be like telling him that. And Jakob was like, no, I want to do it. And Dad's like, oh, I'm not sure you want to do it, mate. I'm not sure you actually really want to do it, you know?
Seen an interview with Centro saying the same about his dad. I think his dad used to tell him like, yeah, no, he doesn't think you make it as a runner. Like you should go
really?
To the doctor or something else like that.
Yeah.
And obviously his dad is an Olympian. And I think, it was just... Yeah, a bit like you say, a bit of reverse psychology and make them want it even more. What do you think? What do you think about that, Jen? Obviously, someone who's running at an extremely high level yourself, like how was your kind of experience of that growing up? Because you ran a lot from quite a young age as well.
Yeah, I stopped running about 13.
Mm. That's why you're so good.
I've done my 10,000 hours. Tick that box. Yeah, I also played a lot of other sports like when I first started running as well, though. So like that sort of element, I still played like tennis, netball, hockey, lacrosse. So I think I just learned to love the sport a lot as well. And I think you see a lot of dropout at university and stuff because I don't know, people maybe not have the same sort of passion for the sport or like the drive to kind of keep going when it is really, really hard and challenging, especially at that sort of age where everything's changing. So I think I developed that kind of passion and love for the sport through those kind of young, like early teenage years, which definitely kind of kept me going to now.
Yeah. And I think that's it really, isn't it? You know, and like we were saying, I think it is just the mental aspect of, you know, starting running when you're young. Can you stick with it? You know, because it is, I think it's one of the most mentally, I mean, all elite sports are mentally taxing to be fair, you know, and all elite sports have dropouts. So, you know,
it's just, I think with running as well, it's a lifestyle. Like, you're not just, you don't just go out for your run and come home and that's like it done for the day. It's like, it's the way you live, isn't it? And I think if you can't accept that or kind of get on board with that, you're not going to make it. And you can definitely see that with the English Britons, that they live and breathe it, don't they, through like every single aspect of their life.
Oh yeah, do they? I mean, yeah,
let's not take anything away from like any of the athletes in this final though, because let's put it this way, Jakob's obviously 1:328 Olympic record, like that's incredible. But even like, all the way down the field, these guys, to make this final, they are living and breathing it. We've got three Brits in the top 10. Obviously, Kerr's made a podium, but like Jake Hayward in ninth and Jake Wightman in 10th, that's still like incredible runs, even just to have three Brits in the final is insane. And let's just hope that we can like, as a nation, kick on from this and keep going. What do we think about kind of away from the Brits? What do you think about Cole Hocker then, Matt? Because we've had a few discussions about him. He's obviously PB'd 3:31 for sixth place, and he's almost now... he's backed up his racing with that. That is now a very, very quick time.
Yeah, I mean, we had Westy on the other day as well. And, you know, I think it was only a matter of time for Cole Hocker to run a quick time. You know, you won the US champs. You're no joke. You know, you win the NCAAs. And in the race, I didn't really see, like, much of him. I think, to be honest, for a lot of the guys, I think Whiteman was the only one who was actually going to try and for like a gold or a silver medal, to be honest with you. And I think the rest of the field were just almost time trialing. I think McSwain tried. I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, apart from McSwain.
Yeah, so obviously you got the three medalists. They were obviously trying for medals, right? And they executed perfectly. And then I think outside of that, you had McSwain and Whiteman who actually really tried to get amongst the medals.
Kipsang, I guess. But apart, yeah.
Yeah, and it just cost them a little bit, you know? Mm. And I think everyone else in the race, probably, you know, they accepted the status of the race and they were time trialing, really. And I think that's what Hocker did, and he executed it very, very well. Mm. You know, simple as. And wow. And
it's crazy, isn't it? Because like, there's some races we've looked at and we've tried to dissect what athletes could have done to do better.
Yeah.
But in that final, like when the winning time is that fast, there's nothing you can do, really. Like, I guess maybe between like Cherry and Ingebrigtsen, like you have a few examples, but when a pace is that hot, like you either have the ability to run that fast or you don't.
Yeah.
When it strings out that much, like you say, when people are time trying, there's not much
room for tactical error. Yeah, Jen, you can help us out. You've been to major champs, Commonwealth Games, you know what I mean, Europeans and stuff. What, you know, how is it, you know, mentally to be switched on for, you know, these 1500 meter boys, their competition was strung out over like 5 days, you know, you've done like, you know, 5 and 10 Ks in the past. How do you manage to keep bringing yourself out there and producing your best in like quite a short period of time?
It's really hard. And I think you learn how to do it better through championship experience, but especially like something like where you're in a village and you're surrounded by athletes all the time. And people finish their comps and they've had good comps or not, it's really hard to keep mentally like on track for what your goals are. And especially the boys, they're like last day of the comp, like you've been in that village for ages, you've like everyone else has finished, they're, you know, going absolutely hard on the like food in the canteen and stuff like that and they're going to bed late, and you've got to kind of just keep like solely focused on what you're there to do. And it is really, really hard. And luckily for me, like a lot of my comps have always been at the very start of a champ, so I can get it done and I can enjoy the rest of it. But I think, yeah, to have that mindset and that ability to just really engage in what you're doing, that can be the difference between meddling or not, definitely.
Yeah. And I think that was something, I think Josh Kerr, I mean, did you hear his post-race interview? I mean, he was kind of like, I saw Keely get a medal and he was like, yep, I want a bit of that. You know what I mean? And it sounds like I don't know, we're not there, but it sounds like he was able to remain very focused throughout the whole thing. And I can imagine there being a ton of distractions going on.
I think one thing that might have helped this year is that everyone has had to leave after 48 hours of comp.
Yeah, that's true.
So like, although the village is getting quieter, that you're not surrounded by people who are just going out and just partying.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
So it's probably a little bit easier this year than it has been previously.
Yeah. I always think that, like, can you imagine the chaos of people who've been there for like 10 days since they competed almost? and being in and around that, say like you're in the marathon on the last day, like having to go through the whole time. Obviously, they're not in the same village this time, but like, yeah, can you imagine like a normal games where you're in the marathon on the last day and everyone has just been at it, doing whatever. We won't speculate, but anyway, there's plenty more races for us to talk about as well, and we're moving into a bit more of your remit of expertise now, Jenny, because we obviously had the women's 10K final and the women's marathon, which, well, I think we all know that you're planning on a move to that at some point in the future. Should we go to 10K then, and we stick with a track? What do you think of that, Jen?
To be honest, it looked like absolute carnage. I cannot imagine what it was like running in those temperatures. I think, like, I've definitely done like 10K champs in really, really hot conditions, and it's disgusting. So for the race to kind of play out as it did, and for the times to be like the winning times still to be sub 30, it's impressive. And I think Hassan, she knew what she was going to do, didn't she? Like, she was like just going to wait for that last like 200 meters and just go for it. And her last 100 meters was 13.6 seconds or something ridiculous. Yeah, man. So I think, yeah, it plays into her hands in the end, and she got exactly what she wanted out of it. But yeah, the Brits, Ailish and Jess, they still, like, Ailish was still only like 4 or 5 seconds off a PB.
Mm-hmm. They battled hard,
which, yeah, pretty impressive. And I think Jess actually collapsed across the finish line. But to
always
both of them, like, a lot of those girls double backed off the 5K as well. So, like, honestly, like, it's, yeah, incredible. I really, yeah, enjoyed watching it.
Well, this is, you know, I just want to say about Hassan, I said that she messed up the 1500 in the way that she took it out and decided to go quick, because for me, like, I know she hasn't got the 800 meter pace of probably Kipyegon and Muir. I think it's more because she hasn't done one, but 13.6 at the end of a 10K, like, that is ridiculous. That's ridiculous, right? So I feel like had she left that 1500 to sit and kick, she probably could have won. You know what I mean? In a heat, she had a ridiculous kick after falling over. Like, her actual kick is really good. But kicking at the end of a 1500 when you're virtually like on PB pace, Olympic record pace, is a different story. But yeah, I mean, yeah, back to the 10K. Did you feel a bit sorry for Gide?
Yeah, and did you see her like make it? She turned around a lot in that race, just like being like, guys, come on, why am I still at the front?
So, no, I think I think she was getting clipped and stuff though. So I think she was getting a bit frustrated there.
Yeah, probably.
But yeah, we get it. I think she made the best she could of it. Like, she's taken it on from 3K and tried to run 7K leading a world class field. And I think in commentary they were saying a few laps ago when she started dropping those 75s, you're like, what was she doing? But I think it was just because she had nothing left. Like, I don't think it was her purposely slowing that down, because if you look at her across the line, she almost collapses when she finally finishes. I think she's done what she had to do. She couldn't leave it to Hassan for a kick. She had to break her. And she did like a really good job of trying, like you say, Jen, like they went 29.55 to win it. But obviously she's come away with bronze. I'm sure she'll be a bit annoyed, but it's a great performance, and trying to lead from 7K out is a great effort, really. And I think she'd rather that than just leaving it and getting the bronze anyway.
Yeah.
If you look how like that move broke apart the rest of the field, like, it was literally just them three then. And I think, you know, that shows just like how strong those girls are.
Well, it's just a consistency of being able to just keep knocking out 70s. Like, once she decided it was going to go a bit quicker, it was like, right, we're just going to run 70s now. She dropped a few 69, 68s, but then it was two 75s, I think. And it was like, I think she was just running on fumes completely. I don't think it was a tactical thing to try and save herself for a kick or anything like that.
Hassan said after she finished the race that, like, she thought she was like burning from like 800 to go, and it was like, she was like, I'm so stupid for doing this, but it's do or die. And like, so I think they were like all struggling massively in the
community. Well, yeah, do you see Hassan's lying on the floor and the cameraman zooming in on her. She's like, water. Yeah. And
he just obviously put a water station out on the track. Like,
yeah,
I think it's almost like
or even just have something at the finish.
Not do that.
Obviously, we'll chat about it in a bit, but I thought that was what was when watching the women's marathon was so good. Just the way, as soon as everyone came across the line, there was medics all over the place helping every single athlete, water, ice, wheelchairs, things like that, whatever they needed, and it was good to see. But yeah, on that 10K, like, so impressive, and obviously the Bahrainian Gazenke, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Never heard of her, mate.
Yeah, former Ethiopian apparently, but yeah, silver medal. Like, I don't think anyone would have called that.
Yeah, never heard of her before either.
So. Nah, never heard of her. She looked chilling. To be fair, she looked easier than Hassan, to be honest. I think she was a bit like, oh, I better not win this race. I don't know.
that 36 last 100 meters.
Yeah, true. I mean, that was ridiculous. I mean, Gide reminded me the Tedesse Bikili days a little bit lumped, you know, when Tedesse would just be grinding out that pace from like 5K, 6K out. And she was just trying to whittle the field down. They virtually lapped almost everyone, but, you know, they must have lapped up to about sort of 6th, 7th place. It was ridiculous.
It was actually quite sneaky from Hassan. Like, I don't think there was anything in it, really, but when she did finally...
Like 100 to go at the push, yeah.
Properly kind of cut people up based off lap runners. Yeah. I think it was... I actually want to say it was Eilish and Sisson. I could be wrong.
No, they were down the home straight. They were a bit further down the home straight. I don't know who it was, but there was a bit of a push and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think it changed the result, but I think it's something we need to look at because it affected Mark Scott in the heats of the 5K as well, on what the rules are with lap runners, because that's what obviously affected Mark Scott. Like, someone inside him had to move out.
Because I know at US... At the US champs, they had like, they said it to everyone before they started the 10K that lap runners stay on the inside, like people lapping will go around the outside. So it's almost, you just need to like make it clear to all the athletes before.
Yeah. For me, they should move out of the way.
Yeah, Jen, what's the real etiquette, mate? What's the unwritten etiquette, if you like?
Sometimes, like, if you're getting lapped, you don't always realize there's someone coming behind you.
I suppose.
Especially if there's a crowd, you're not going to hear them. And so I think if you notice, then you move out and they're already moving out, that can cause a collision. So I feel like, if you're coming from behind and you're lapping, then maybe moving out is a better way to do it. But obviously, that's just frustrating because then you're running further than needed.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting you say that. Because I always, every time I see it, like in kind of major champs, like 5 and 10Ks, like when it's on the last lap, I'm like, what are you doing? Just get out of the way. Get into lane 4 or 5. Like,
yeah. You've got to remember that those lapped athletes are probably absolutely like dying as well.
Well, yeah.
For them to be like, oh no, I've got to move out to let someone come like storming past me as well. It's probably like processing that at the same time as trying to run is quite hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think at the US Champs, them staying on the inside, like, I think that probably is the safest thing to do because, like you said, Jim, so often we've seen it that the person will try and move out or they're running in like the edge of lane one and then some of the pack will like dart on their inside and some of the pack will go round them. So the person will get like swamped and then that like causes a bit of a commotion. So I guess like it's fairer to do that, but it's kind of just like,
And it depends. Like if you're just like a singular person lapping, then it's all right. But if you're like coming down the last 100 or whatever, or off the bend, like, the last 100, three or four of you, like all battling for that.
I think that's when the problems arise, is when people are still racing.
Yeah.
When we've got people who are like completely detached, they find it quite easy to move or just stay, like you say. But when we've got, because it happens and people are still well in their right to race, of course. But yeah, say there's four of you and you're racing for what might be, I don't know, 8th, 9th, 10th and 11th and coming top 10 at the Olympics is a massive deal.
Yeah.
They're going to be racing themselves. But yeah, no, it is hard. And I guess, like I say, that probably is the fairest way. I've just looked at the results and Abiri ran a PB, obviously more known for her 5Ks. But Abiri had a PB for 4th and Nian Saba had a national record in 5th. So hopefully she'll be pleased with that after getting kind of DQ'd in the heats of the 5K.
Yeah, rightly so, though. And then, I mean, like Jen said, our British girls, I just think, you know, they did so well. Eilish and Jess, I think Paula was even saying as well, they just battled to the line.
I think that was Eilish's highest ever finishing position in an Olympic Games as well, I think.
Wow, really? She's done three.
Yeah, 9th place. Because one of the girls got DQ'd, didn't they? I think she was the one that was just ahead of her.
Well, I mean, she's only like pretty much 2 seconds behind Klosterhalfen, and we think of Klosterhalfen as being...
She was someone who actually had a good run.
Easily one of the best of the Europeans. And I know she's not been quite at her best recently, but to be just behind her, like, I think, like I say, a phenomenal run. She's beat Emily Sisson, who looked incredible at the US Trials.
Yeah. And she coped well in the heat at the US Trials as well. So she was pretty well prepared for this race.
Yeah. Jen, as someone who's kind of within this event, like it's your event, like that 5 and 10K, like do you see kind of Europeans and kind of Brits in particular getting in and amongst the Africans in these kind of races? Obviously Hassan is from the Netherlands, like I guess we should reiterate that as well, but do you see like the majority of the time we have this kind of African dominance in these events?
I feel like there is there's almost a separation, and like especially things like this or like World Cross events like that, like become like finishing top European as a European is a big deal in those sort of events. So I think there you don't want to go into a race being like, oh well, there's 4 East Africans who are going to beat me, like and the highest I'm going to finish is 5th. But there's an element of that, I think, running 29:55 as a Brit, it's almost like it's not gonna happen.
Yeah.
Seeing as like the Olympic standard is, what was it, Jen? 15:10.
15:10.
You have to go quicker. You have to be 15 seconds, basically 10 seconds inside the Olympic standard twice. That shows you the level of 10,000 meter running these women are doing. And her PB, Gede's PB is 29:01. That is just sickening.
Yeah. And it's always frustrating as well as an athlete looking at that and being like, well, what can I do to kind of close that gap? Like, what is there?
10,000 hours. There's no excuses.
Have I just not done enough hours?
I know. But on that line, like on that point, this Olympics as a whole, I have definitely seen a huge increase in, I mean, I haven't looked at any stats or anything like that, but I've seen a huge increase in Europeans getting amongst it.
For sure. And I think that's
that 15 final middle distance, I almost feel like we're actually becoming the best continent on the world. Right now, I mean, 3 Brits, we had 3 women as well. Middle distance wise, I would say Europe is the strongest continent without that.
But we even saw it in the sprints, there was almost a change in the guard. Like, look at that men's 4x1 with the Italians in what's been kind of a Jamaican and USA powerhouse in the sprints.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there definitely is change coming, but it's whether it happens kind of in those, I guess, distances where there's probably more of a gap and it's
well, mate,
to make up.
You say that.
Talk about,
let's move on to the marathon because an American's getting on the podium.
Wow. Yeah. For me, like until I watched the 15 today, I actually found it one of the most kind of exciting races of the champs for me. And I don't know whether that was because I was like, just because it was Molly Seidel so high up, but I just thought it was like a weird race at first. And it kind of just got me, as it went on, I just got more and more into it. Because it started off and I was like, oh, it's going to be a complete jog fest. And I kind of got it because of the heat and things like that. But they went through, I think they went through 5K outside 18 minutes, it was like 18:14, something like that. And I was like, oh, I don't know, can I, like, do I want to stay up for... But it's to be honest, and the kind of as it went on, I was like, "Wow, I'm getting really, really into this." What did you guys think? Obviously, we had, just for people in case you haven't seen, Jephthah won it, 2:27. Koskay, the world record holder, was second, and then Molly Seidel from the USA was third.
Well, I'm going to admit that I actually did go to bed, so I didn't watch it, but I have read about it, and I'm a massive Molly Seidel fan. So to see her come third was massive. And I think it goes to show that you are, like, almost contradictory. You are capable of competing against them. But I think, I don't know, I think the conditions definitely kind of probably played a part in that. It wasn't a fast race. And I think...
Well, that's it. I think Seidel's run 2:25 is her PB. Yeah. And Koskay's obviously ran 2:14. Yeah, 10 seconds separated them in the conditions in Sapporo. That,
and I think
what a level of that is. Like,
it goes to show that if you, especially for something like the marathon, you're preparing for months and months in advance. So if you prepare for that specific race, then you're going to do really well. Mm. And that's really hard, like preparing for heat and humidity, because you can't go, and it's not like, you know, preparing for a hilly course. You can't just go outside and find a hill, or, you know, stare at the sun and hope it's going to help. But I think, yeah, preparing for that race in order to match the conditions and what it was going to be like definitely would have played a massive factor, I think.
Yeah, I mean, conditions are brutal. I was the same as you, Jen. Unfortunately, I was watching it, and then Paula's voice is just quite soothing, so I sort of nodded off. But don't worry, I rewatched it from where I left off this morning before I knew the results, so I'm well updated. But mate, one thing for me was the obviously they needed to fuel, but there seemed to be the carnage at the fueling stations.
Oh.
Just, could they not sort it out? Like, I think the country's tables were just a bit too close together, because yeah, it's something which, if I was a bloke, I'd be really cautious of tonight, because when they go off slow like that, they must have been a pack of about 60 or something. And their first drink station, oh my God, you know.
Yeah, you'd think, could they not put them on both sides of the road and then spread them out a bit more?
Maybe some of that. That's a good shout, mate. Yeah.
Like, I just always think, but did you see, like, Chip Chia was getting Koskai's drink most of the time for her anyway?
It's probably a safer bet than them both sort of like scrambling that around the same
but
table.
I was watching this, and I was thinking, I was like, oh, is Chip Chia just pacing Koskai? And then obviously, like, at the end, Chip Chia went, nah, I'm going off now. But yeah, a lot of the time she was grabbing three drinks.
Yeah, but like, I think it's safer. And I actually saw—I don't know if you saw it—the Polish woman
with the big bag. Yeah, yeah. So she had a bag with it was like a would be a carb drink, and then she had water in there, and it was full of ice as well. But she's running along like with a full-on shopping bag. But yeah, it was interesting to see like what different athletes did. Like obviously, a lot of them wearing hats. Sunglasses, people.
Hey, I've got
tops in their hats. Yeah. I can't wait to see what Galen Rupp does tonight, because he always does something. Obviously, in Rio, he had a new cap with every water bottle every 5K.
That's a good shout.
I saw some people had holes in the bibs as well as the vest.
Oh wow!
So yeah, that was cooling as well. I think that's just what's so interesting about a marathon. There's so many.
I also feel like the women have
to prepare for it.
Yeah, the women also, because they wear like the tight tops, they were like shoving ice down.
Yeah.
I mean, on their chest. And that, I mean, I wonder if any bloke will do that, because it seems
like... Well, that's because you could wear the, you know, the sprinter style.
Yeah, no, you could wear a tight vest. Yeah. But I don't know, it might be contradictory. So I think you just overheat in a tight vest if you're a bloke, because you probably wouldn't wear a crop top.
Get the one with the zip though, half zip. You just unzip it a little bit further.
Yeah, and obviously the USA, as always, they had their kind of alternate strip for the marathon, which I think is to do with the heat thing. So they wore white.
Quite a few countries, man. I saw the race walks. Italy rocked a white vest. France a white vest as well.
And that's what Norway did for the triathlon as well. That's why they had an all white suit, and people were like kind of making a mockery of it, because it went a bit see through when for the swim. But I mean, the Norwegian guy, apologies to the triathlon fans, because I don't actually remember his name. He obviously won a triathlon. So that clearly helped in those conditions. But yeah, like what a race it was.
Hey, do you want to touch upon, I mean, Jen, if you're a Molly Seidel fan, do you want to touch upon like Molly a little bit, like the ups and downs she's had in her career?
Yeah, well, she was a brilliant like NCAA athlete, but I think she had a lot of mental health and eating disorder issues kind of going through that kind of that stage of her life. And I think she's been really open about it, and she's kind of sought help and took time off running to get it fixed and sorted and kind of allow her to have this career as an athlete. And it's obviously paid off, and like I think there's a lot of bravery and courage behind kind of admitting and accepting help for those sort of things. For her to do that and then come back, you know, in what is her third ever marathon, to come third at the Olympic Games is an incredible, you know, thing to achieve. And I know she signed with Puma at the beginning of this year. So Kony dropped her last year. So I bet they're feeling a bit stupid. So yeah, I think, yeah, she's come a long way, and like, you know, it's a third ever marathon. I think she's got a really good future ahead.
Yeah. You love to see them sorts of stories where people, you know, through adversity, through rough patches, they can come back. And she clearly had the talent, like you say, in the NCAA, she was a terrific runner, and she's managed to come back and get the bronze medal today as well. I mean, on signing with Puma, do you think the shoe game, the shoe hype is just done now? Because I kind of feel like it's irrelevant what shoes you wear now. They all seem to be equal. I think obviously for a period there was...
I think it's very much gone back to personal preference now, rather than what, you know, the best shoe
finery.
And it's what works for you. I think there are elements of shoe technology development which suit more people better than other people. And I think it's just finding the shoe that suits you the best, rather than a shoe that's got better technology than another.
Let's put it this way. Like, we had Adidas at the top of the podium for the women's marathon, Asics for both the men's and women's triathlon. And if you said that 2-3 years ago, when the Next Percent kind of was purely taken over, you'd be like, nah.
Yeah.
Nothing against Nike or anything like that, but I think it is good to see that, like I say, the other brands have clearly caught up, and now with the restrictions and things, hopefully we can have some sort of fair playing field, like particularly for the elite athletes, because I don't think it was really, besides price, I don't think it was really a problem for like your everyday runner who can choose to wear whatever they wanted. But I think it was just more for people who were sponsored by brands that hadn't quite brought out their latest shoe yet. It was just like a bit of an unfortunate kind of 6 months or so to a year maybe.
I think that crossover is fully done now. Like Jen says, I think personal preference. Another thing, Molly Seidel as well, she obviously put a result on Strava. Jen, do you follow on Strava?
I do follow her on Strava.
I just want to comment on her warm-up, you know. So she did 8-minute warm-up or something. 8 minutes.
0.96 miles. People were fuming that she didn't do the
she didn't round it up.
Point, I love how like she'll go out and run like 8-9 minute pace like for her runs. Then she goes and gets like flipping third at the Olympics. It's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people could take a leaf out of that, but couldn't they, Jen?
Give us a bit of info if you follow on Strava, like a bit of her training and stuff.
She did one with, I think it's Sweat Elite or something on YouTube the other week.
Right.
On the track, she did 6 by a mile, 2 blocks of 3 off, I think it was off a minute. And she worked down from 5:20 to 5 flat. And then she ran 4 400s and spikes in 73 average, I think.
Right.
So that was more of like a 10K session for her. But I think, yeah, some of her long runs are like absolutely incredible. Like 22 miles at like 5:30s at altitude. Just like, how does she do it?
The long runs, yeah, seem key for these marathoners, doesn't it?
Yeah. And the day she traveled out to, it's like I stalk her. The day she traveled out to the Olympics, I think she went for a run before her flight at like 3:40 in the morning.
Wow. I mean, to be fair on that, you know, another thing which we can't forget about this race was it got moved forward. So it was actually 6 a.m.
And they only had 12 hours to prepare for that.
It was 9 hours before their bus was due to leave. They found out. Which is just ridiculous.
6 a.m. They must have been getting up at sort of 3 in the morning, probably to eat and stuff. It's just what? And that's something that if you do have a rough night's sleep, like say you're an athlete who just, you know, couldn't get to sleep or whatever, you're tossing and turning. But if you only have like 4 or 5 hours sleep, you're going to feel rotten. You know, I know there's adrenaline and stuff, but because it's a marathon, there's no place to hide, is there?
Yeah. And it's just like being awake at that time, like however many hours you've been awake for, I just feel like your body cannot function the same way as it can at like 9 p.m., especially when it comes to racing. Like,
yeah, she's going to crash today, boy. Jesus. I'll pass out somewhere in Sapporo. I mean, that pretty much sums up let's just discuss the Brits. Obviously, we had Steph Twell and Steph Davies. We've had them both on the podcast. Were you a little bit disappointed in their performance, Jen?
A little bit. I think Steph Davies, she probably ran a very smart race for her, you know, level of experience in an event like that. I think that's her first ever championship, first time running for Great Britain.
So she
paced it very well. She obviously really considered the conditions and she moved through the field. I think she was in like pretty much dead last at the start, first 5K. I think she was in like 70th place.
The thing is, I mean, me and Ollie were talking about this, weren't we, Lama? Just saying like, you know, Jess Bezecchi got up there a little bit. And because the first 5K was so slow.
It was a weird watch. I think, I really admire Jess Bezecchi ran because obviously she's finished way down the field in the end, but she actually went with the pack and she was in kind of the top 25 for a fair amount of the race. And I think it's hard, isn't it? Like, I guess, what's your perspective on this, Jen? Because there's an extent that's like, yeah, it's a full marathon. It's ridiculous heat. I know I can't hang with these girls. But there's also the fact it's the Olympic Games. The pace is something that, pace-wise, regardless of conditions, I can go with. So how do you make that decision on whether you just go with the pack or think, oh, people are going to come back to me and I'll run a more conservative race?
I think doing the latter like requires a lot of confidence in what you're doing, which is actually really hard to kind of have. So I still think like you're going into an Olympic Games, you're running a marathon, you know what the conditions are like. You've got to approach it with that kind of perspective. And if you know going out at that pace is suicidal and you're going to blow up in the last 10, 15K, it's better off to play it safe. And you've got enough time in a marathon to get to halfway and be like, oh, I'm actually feeling better than I thought. Pick it up. But if you've already kind of burnt the wheels by that point, it's a long way to go.
Yeah, that is a good point, to be fair.
It's such a tough decision, and like, fair play to it. All three of them finished the race, and we saw so many dropouts.
A lot of achievement in itself. I don't envy them having to do that, to be honest.
I obviously, well, watching it last night, I don't know, I think I'd been past the point of tiredness, but I watched it till they kind of had all crossed the line. And one of the athletes from the Solomon Islands actually PB'd.
Yeah. I was just looking at that. 3 hours, so, 2 minutes.
Yeah. So I remember looking at the start list and then thinking it was like going through at the start. They were all kind of between, obviously you've got Costco, but majority of between like 225 and 235. Sorry. And then you had, the athlete from the Solomon Islands, Firisua, I believe is pronounced, who has had a PB of 3:03 or something like that. Okay. She managed to run 3:02.
Record.
It's not affecting her, mate. No excuses.
She put in the work.
Yeah, real talk. And she's obviously beat a load of DNFs and she's beat one athlete who finished as well.
One thing about marathon runners, I just feel like championship marathon running is so far removed from any other races that these women will probably do throughout the season, you know what I mean, to big city marathons. And I think that's the, you know, we often see upsets at Olympic marathons and world champ marathons because it's just a completely different style of racing and it's positions that count. You know, there's not pacers and... You know, and maybe the Brits, there's a little bit of that. And I think that was what was great that we actually had that trial, because at least, you know, and Americans have that trial. Molly Seidel has experienced, actually racing a marathon, not just time trialing it. You know, and like you say, going through the first 5K in that pace, I mean, how many of these ladies probably would have even trained at that pace? You know, and sometimes when you run slower, you feel worse.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
I just realized we only one kind of, well, not the only reason, but one of the main reasons Seidel almost got a medal, because there was a group of four that broke away, and it was, I think, Tiuri from Israel, who just stopped at the side of the road and then left Seidel in the bronze medal position. She went on to finish the race, but I mean, it just shows you like how grueling the conditions were, that people were, well, they were what, 3-4K from the finish, and she's fighting for bronze, and she just had to stop. And can you just imagine how kind of
that South Peter had a died a death as well. I think it was Salpeter, mate. She died. Yeah.
Get confused.
Yeah, yeah, but she finished down in 66. So yeah, something drastic happened to her.
Oh yeah, I think it might have been the upper Israeli athlete. It was one.
Yeah, man. But I mean, that's pretty much it. Wrapping up the Olympics, Jen. Favorite race
overall throughout the whole Olympics.
Yep.
Women's 800. Absolutely loved it. I thought it was a great race. To have three Brits in it. Keely, she's cool.
It feels like that was ages ago now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy. Obviously, we've still got the men's marathon to go tonight.
So. Jen, if you had to predict one winner in 2024, who would you predict? Any event?
One winner, 2024. You know what? I'd probably still go Keely, 800.
You think she's going to win in 2024?
Yeah, I feel like she's only 19. If she can,
a chance to be fair.
Yeah, what's she done? Taking like 6 seconds off a PB this year? If she can just...
She has, over 800 meters. Yeah. Incredible. I mean, goodness me.
If she can just keep the same attitude towards it and like just not kind of, you know, take it to an extreme that's not necessary, I think she could go really far.
Yeah, I think that's it. Attitude and the way she just keeps approaching races, she keeps that, she'll be absolutely fine. We're going to see some good battles with her and Moo, I think, over the next few years.
That's going to be cool. I think, yeah.
And her and Ricky on a domestic side as
yeah.
well.
Yeah, and Muir.
Yeah.
Well, I think, yeah, the British middle distance is, yeah.
And Jen, you know, we know how important self-confidence is. Are you backing yourself to be in Paris?
I'm very much hoping to. I I'm going to put in hopefully another 10,000 hours worth to try and get there. I've only been to the Eiffel Tower once, and I want to go back. And I don't want to pay for a flight myself. So there's only one way to get there.
Very true. I like that. And thanks for coming on, Jen. Pleasure as always.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.